Welcome to Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast hosted by Daniela Steinfeld.
This episode is produced in cooperation with Independent Art Fair New York City. It will be part of the fair's 2023 OVR.
I'm Daniela, and this podcast is about my personal and also about a lot of other people's enthusiasm for art. Art can touch on all parts of life, and therefore we talk about all parts of life. I hope to get you on board and to tell you interesting stories you enjoy listening to. We're recording via the internet, so please excuse any glitches and sound quality.
Episode 76, recorded February 27, 2023. My guest for this special episode is D'Angelo Lovell Williams, who is a Black HIV-positive artist expanding narratives of Black and queer intimacy through photography. D'Angelo will have a presentation with Higher Pictures Generation at this year's Independent Art Fair. Hi, D'Angelo. Very happy to have you.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
You did a whole photographic series that included members of your own family a while ago, Papa Don't Preach. And family relations aren't always that easy, I guess. Can you tell me a bit about your upbringing in Jackson, Mississippi, your background, and how you found your own identity and voice as an artist?
Yeah, I grew up in Jackson, Mississippi. It's the capital of Mississippi, Jackson is, and it felt like a city. So it was just like, you know, I grew up thinking I live in a city. And then, you know, I did, but, you know, my mom's mom, I basically grew up as an only child. I have other siblings, but I was my mom's only child. And my dad and mom never married. They were engaged. So I lived with my mom up until I was 18. The family that I saw the most was my mom's side of the family. Mm-hmm. And my dad, since, you know, I never lived with him, he was around at times, but he was in out of the country, working different jobs, whatnot. I met my older sister when I was around 5 or 6, and she was 7 or 8. She's 2 years older than me. Her name's Sade. We both have names of singers. And we grew up knowing that we were siblings.
The people that you looked at most were women.
Pretty much, yes. I mean, I was always looking at, you know, the things around me, the things around them. Mm-hmm. It wasn't always art. Not even artifacts, but it was just like things that represented what they liked, like where they went. Family images, a lot of family images on the walls of like the homes.
Like photos?
Photographs, yes, images.
Photographs. So you were looking early on at photographs, images.
Yeah, they might not have necessarily been considered art, but yes, they were, you know, upheld by family members. And they were the only historical references a lot of us had to family, because, you know, our history hadn't been recorded like that in Black families. Many families, of course, you know, grew up like that, but Black ones specifically.
So you only have a history which goes back like one generation or two generations at the most?
We have images, like I have images of my grandparents' parents, but that's about it. So that history is visual at that point, at that generation, but before that, I have no recollection. Maybe others in my family who I've never met or, you know, never spoken to about these things do. My interest in art started with experiencing films and music and TV shows. A lot of the things that were heavily around me. My mom was, can't remember, she is an apartment manager currently back home in Jackson. And she was interested in clothes. She bought a lot of clothes and art, and we still have some art pieces that she had, you know.
She bought art
that wasn't necessarily, you know, it was never mainstream. It was like, you know, we went to a lot of thrift stores, we went to flea markets, you know, they were art to us. And I mean, they are art, of course. All of that was around me. And, you know, it's the South, and not saying that people, you know, in the South are out of touch with a lot of what's going on outside of Mississippi in the art world. But everybody doesn't keep up. And my mother was one of those people who didn't need to know the history of anything. It was always like what the thing was at face value, like how beautiful it was, what it would do, you know, no one else having it, you know, things like that. So
would she talk about that? Would you listen to that? Or was it more about looking at the things?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was all a part of a larger narrative of how she wanted living situations to be, or like the our home decor, basically. So I lived in houses where my mom would paint every room a different color. She painted the ceilings. It was very colorful, whether we lived in a home or an apartment, and very like full of beautiful objects to look at, mirrored tables and things like that that were found at these thrift stores, things like that, you know? Yeah.
Special surroundings. So your mom decorated your home in a very beautiful and special way.
Yes, yes, yes. And many family members did, yeah.
And you were aware of that?
I looked at it through the lens of beauty, purely, you know.
And when did you take up your first camera?
Well, that came years later. Photography was not my first entry into art.
How did you start?
I'm a 90s kid. I was born in 92, and my mom, of course, and dad were both working. I went to daycare. I went to after school programs sometimes, up until I stayed home by myself. I was watching TV a lot and movies and like kids shows back then, Power Rangers, Pokemon, like all of these different animated shows. My interest in art started by drawing and wanting to be an animator. And I did that for much of my adolescent, much of my youth, pretty much. I went through a performing art program starting at fourth grade, which you have to apply to. And you could be in this program up through 12th grade, your senior year, which is what I did. So I was introduced to drawing from life once I got into this program. But I started, I applied with the cartoon characters that I drew, or like, you know, whatever it was.
Did you invent some cartoon characters yourself?
I would make up my own. I would. It was all a part of that expansion of the imagination. You see one thing that is on TV and then you want to draw your own thing, things like that. And of course, finding friends that also liked to do this. It was just, you know, I knew I wanted to be an artist, but it was specifically in animation or voice acting. I didn't know this, but I knew I just wanted to be an artist. But I didn't know the trajectory, or I couldn't force the direction in a certain way.
Did queerness already play a part, or did you have a word for that, or didn't you even think about it?
I think it did. I knew I was queer, 5 or 6, and I'm looking in Jet magazine and seeing this picture of Tyson Beckford, you know, modeling for Calvin Klein, or I'm watching the person I'm named after, D'Angelo, who's an R&B singer, singing How Does It Feel on TV in a music video, and he's shirtless, and it's very like a beautiful Black man to look at. And I'm like 5 or 6, and I'm like, okay, it was all about, you know, like those are the things that were never really around me. Like, I mean, there were Black men around me, of course, but I never, you know, knew that any of that would become a part of, or the visuals of my parents being a part of my work in a way. So yeah, I was drawing, painting, sculpting, making ceramics, drawing on the wheel from like fourth grade up until 12th grade, my senior year. But I was introduced to photography specifically as an art form through this art program when I was in 10th grade, because we got a working darkroom on campus.
So it was not digital at that time?
Of course it existed, but that wasn't my start in photography. I learned how to like work in the darkroom, develop images, prints, things like that, and of course use analog cameras. But that isn't when photography captivated me. It is when I got to experience digital photography and Photoshop, learning how to manipulate images and make them actually do the things that I wanted.
Well, which is like animation, which is like drawing in a way.
Yeah. So it was really just like my imagination. Of course, I played a lot of video games. I listened to a lot of music. I was actually knowing that I was going to school to be an artist, like all this time. And of course, I loved music so much that I would also be writing songs. I would also be making beats, you know, things like that.
Did you ever record?
I did. Well, I mean, not vocals. So at this art program that I was in fourth and fifth grade, you get to experience the other mediums. So you have to take classes in them. But I didn't fully take music lessons, but I played some stuff on the piano in these classes. Or I learned how to do certain dances in ballet, or we performed in theater. So it was that kind of academic rigor where like I'm exposed to all of that, but I'm also knowing that this is my main thing. So I'm not trying to like do those other things, but they still inspire me.
And then you decided really to take on the camera as your first and foremost tool.
Yeah. I learned how to use Photoshop, and I was using digital cameras before that. I was using my mom's pink Kodak point and shoot for a while, just taking pictures. But I would use those pictures to kind of like make certain images that I was making when I fell in love with digital photography and started playing around in Photoshop, because I would use these photographs and I would make these surreal images where my friends are in these different otherworldly situations, like sitting on floating rocks or like floating above a lake, or just like very cinematic visual things I would try to produce. And I was really inspired by, I was inspired by the film Avatar, James Cameron's Avatar, around that time a lot. I always say that that film inspired my image making then.
Until now?
It's how it started. The kinds of images, what I was going for, the sense of another world, but the world being Jackson, Mississippi, just like with some floating things or like, and I keep that with me now about how much I try to make a place not feel or look like a place in my work.
Everything you said until now, it sounded actually like you had a good home, you were loved, even when your father was absent, your mom was there.
Absolutely.
You felt quite safe, you
Absolutely.
Know, all these things inspired you.
I was sheltered, and that has stayed with me. I'm 30 now, and of course, I'm still my mom's only child. But it was like I, at some point, because I was never out growing up, I didn't come out until grad school publicly. And to some friends, my junior, senior year of college. But like, I wasn't making work, to your question of the queerness influencing anything. It was just like, I feel like it did in certain ways, but I think it was purely through me being interested. Not that, of course, being interested in art is a queer thing, but it exposes you to a sort of queerness that a lot of people don't necessarily see as queerness. Not a lot of people know what all of the roads and pathways that lead them to art. It could be through another person.
Yes.
It could be through a place, anything. And I feel like in that sense, there is a queerness of like, what kinds of people are also interested in those things that lead to this sort of art meetup. That's how I have felt more as an adult looking back at it now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for me, it was like, I am going to be interested in art, although my dad wanted me to play baseball because I'm left-handed, or like join his fraternity when I got to college or grad school, just to like have that sort of lineage. I wouldn't call it like a masculine lineage, but it was what he wanted for me, even though I had always been supported for my interest in art, which a lot of people aren't always supported for the things that they're interested in. And a lot of people that I went to school with who I thought would be also continuing to be aspiring artists would be alongside me, but that's not necessarily the case. Like a lot of my friends may not have necessarily stopped making art, but didn't continue to have the support or like the space, or like they probably majored in something else, as opposed to knowing that we were in this program for 11 years, like making art.
11 years, that's a long time. For a really young person, it's a whole life.
Yes. So that was my life.
But did it change anything when you were coming out?
It didn't. I mean, I think my interest in photography at that point, I was just making images. I didn't really know what I was going to major in when I had applied to Memphis College of Art, but I knew it was going to be painting, sculpture, or photography. And of course, I decided on photography. But I was making images that were inspired by other cultures outside of my own, like horrible images. And I would never make them again, by the way. The images weren't about me. I made a project for an assignment one time that was about the Mexican siesta, where I'm like sleeping on railroad tracks. And it was just like, it was chaotic. It was a lot. But I learned through that experience of showing images in class that I had no relation to, what to start photographing. And I started photographing myself. I started photographing my friends, my white friends specifically early on that I had made when I got to college. I did have a lot of black friends, and I wasn't out. And I thought that if they knew that I was gay, I wouldn't be friends with him anymore. That was my thinking.
And was it true?
It wasn't true at all. But that's what I told myself. I mean, even with my mom, who, of course, I was never out to, the things that I would experience as far as like my mom or my grandmother saying that they knew someone who was HIV positive or, you know, wouldn't want to hug them when I was growing up, or like conversations around, you know, Magic Johnson's HIV diagnosis, or my mom getting her hair done by trans women at one point, but, you know, still feeling how she feels and like not wanting me to be gay, or like, you know, things like that, that would make me not want to, like, I would show up as a full person, but that was something that I was never having any kind of conversation about. You know, I'm trying not to like leave things out that are important, but just as far as like how I saw myself visually represented in mainstream art and media, that was one thing. It was like, it was very rare to see bigger bodied people, Black people.
At that time, you were bigger bodied.
Yes. I mean, I was a fat kid. I still feel like a fat kid. I mean, I take pride in it in general. But as far as the types of bodies that we see reflected back at us that are not always representative of the lives people actually live and experience and who they see. And a lot of that gets overlooked, and it will continue to get overlooked. But I was always, people thought that I was a girl growing up. I had a lot of hair. I had braids for a while. I mean, I had twists, and basically because I didn't like going to the barbershop, I didn't want to get my hair cut, things like that. Just things that I was afraid to like say or be or expose, you know, the people around me who are expressing how they feel about certain things. It's like, I held a lot in.
And when did you find the courage, or when did you find the way that you said, yeah, but these are exactly the things I want to address, and these are exactly the things I want to bring out into the open?
The aspects about Black queerness, when I was in college, I started making images where I was talking about these different experiences that I had growing up, but I would use a friend as the sitter, for example. I would make these images that were constricting the body a lot. Like, I was putting jackets on people backwards, zipping them up so they like felt restricted or constricted. I would wrap like bike tubes around my body to look like this entity of like whatever, like blob constricting me. Things like that, that were kind of visually representing a feeling that I felt growing up, having to deal with questions about like, am I a boy or am I a girl, but not knowing how to go about that, or if I necessarily needed to. But it was just like a constant thing. I mean, I wouldn't have called myself pretty, but it was something about being associated with beauty, like against my will. And not necessarily, I don't want to call it beauty, because I feel like that only is very limiting. If people are associating me or thinking that I'm a girl when I'm not, like there's something visually that they're attaching those qualities to, is what my thinking was. So like, I was seen as like a pretty boy at times, and that led to the things that, like, I didn't want to play sports, things like that. So I was around all the softness. I wanted all the softness, and my images kind of reflected that softness.
Is that also why you'd want to be identified as non-binary? Because we have sort of like so restricted thoughts about what does it mean to be male and what is female, and male is just like hard and testosterone and all that, and female is all just like soft and squishy.
I mean, I think we should get rid of labels in general, but
exactly.
For some sort of clarification, I think I don't want to be identified as male or female or man or woman. I think male and female should only be in conversation about animals historically.
That's a good point.
But it's also going back to how people want to identify how they actually feel, as opposed to like what's been decided for them. I mean, a lot of people attach what they think men should be doing, what they think women shouldn't be doing, all of these things, and that's not for them to decide.
Absolutely.
And I feel like we all exist on spectrums, whether that be our own or a more established one.
Yeah, or probably you just feel like a person, like a human being.
Right. But people can't just feel like that.
No, that's not allowed.
According to other people, you know. But yes, all of that to go back to me knowing that I was always queer, knowing that I felt a certain way about myself, that I didn't want, I mean, I want to say I didn't want to do hard things. I didn't want this sort of like this roughness that's expected of me mm-hmm. and expected of a lot of Black, quote unquote, men identifying people. I mean, expectations all around the board for men and women.
I would say it's quite advanced to decide that in a quite male-dominated society.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like if you have people deciding these things for you, it's like you're not living the life you should be living. Mm-hmm. It doesn't allow people to fully be themselves when that is their experience. Transness, non-binariness, all this queerness, it's just like these are lives that people have always lived since the beginning of time.
Absolutely, yeah.
But it's like we've never had examples of them being treated the same way as what the dominant hierarchies are, the systemic patriarchy hierarchies that have placed different values on people based on where they're from, what they do, what they can do. Mm-hmm. Slavery, of course, all of that has continued to show up in the ways that it does today. And it's just like all of that can't be fixed with an artwork or a book. People are responding to things. That's how I see a lot of what I've experienced, you know, the things people make as artists, the things people decide that they want to do as people, it shows who they are, mm-hmm. what kinds of people that they are, you know? Not that that's a good or bad thing. It's just like, that's the response. That's how we respond to the world, like what we think we're meant to, what we think we're called to do in this world. You know, like I think about the people who were making art alongside me in grade school and wanting them to be there, you know, but them going another route in their careers or lives, maybe because they wanted to, maybe because their parents wanted them to, or like they just couldn't, like not everyone can afford art school. Like I have a lot of debt. So it's just like, I knew I wanted to be an artist and I specifically wanted to go to an art school. I wanted that experience. I wanted it to lead me somewhere, not knowing, of course, if I would ever become an artist or feel like succeed at any of the things that I put my mind to.
Never underestimate the strength of softness, I think. I wonder, in the images I saw, there is something. I mean, very often it's like two men or it's one man, but they have absolutely a vulnerability and a softness about them. Or a certain kind of beauty, beauty not in the superficial sense, you know, not like surface beauty, another kind of beauty.
Yeah, it took a while to get there.
Yes, you know, the thing is that beauty is not prettiness.
Right.
You know, beauty can go deeper. It can.
Yes, it often doesn't, but that's, you know, and that's why I think it's called something, or it is something else. It is something deeper.
Yeah, like I often say that. Actually, I think I say it all the time, but I think that beauty is so much deeper than the surface.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yes.
When I first read some of the interviews you've given or the images I saw, I was thinking it is about pain and trauma, but that's not true. Now I feel like there is a certain joy also in it.
Absolutely.
You know,
I mean, it's hard.
Yeah, it's know, hard. It's but from what place are you creating? What, from where are you coming?
I mean, I feel like I'm coming from so many different places of like just being inspired by the things I love, mm-hmm. or the people around me, or like the things that I have experienced that aren't all joy. You know, mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think I'm trying to make something joyful out of any experience I have or thing I do or place I go. I think I'm responding to these specific things, knowing that there are so many different routes, emotions that can come from looking at one thing, despite what I might make an image about. It can be about nothing or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But once these things leave me, they'll have their own lives. Mm-hmm.
So it's up to me, my response.
Yes, to a certain capacity, mm-hmm. because, you know, I make images that I'm either responding to something historical, I'm inspired by something visual from a film or from a song line or lyric, or the work of another person. That could be, you know, like me responding to someone that I'm heavily anti, like Mapplethorpe, or like someone who's a colleague, you know.
Oh, you're heavily anti Mapplethorpe? Why? Because it's so idealized?
Not even. It's just a matter of how he treated Black people. And I feel that way about, you know, and not specifically Black people, but all of the controversies that threatened to take away funding. I mean, it's not his fault, like, of course, as far as like the NEA wanting to defund the making of art projects that were seen overly sexual or like that they didn't want to be produced because, of course, that's like, that is a history of queerness that we had, of course, kind of visual representations of it throughout history in paintings and whatnot of men with their prepubescent lovers in paintings, things like that, that had this sort of upholding in art history because they were shown. Of course, we have other images of more written about histories of queerness in all of these different time periods of art making throughout our history, but we never really had representations of Blackness and queerness in that way, or this sort of reflection of it in actual Black communities. We know the history that we are born into to a certain extent, but we really only know like what's surrounded us, the history that we've learned alongside of as it's happening. But going back to being interested in that ancestry, like we don't, well, speaking for myself, I never thought about ancestry in the way that I do now in my work, as far as like knowing that we don't have certain visual representations of generations before us, a lot of people who couldn't be represented visually or were, and their lives were lost, any number of reasons, but specifically Black and queer people. And that was something that I thought that if I'm going to be making images, I can't limit the inspirations for them because it's tied into all of these things that make up our lives. I mean, that sounds very broad, but it's like, if I'm inspired by films where it's two white queer people or a white queer person and a Black queer person, like that visual narrative is heavily implanted in mainstream media.
But never two Black queer people.
Yes. So like those are the underlying conversations of, you know, what we know exists for queer people, but for certain ones, it doesn't. It's not just my experience. It's a lot of people's experiences of having the real experience, but not being able to imagine it any different way.
And do you feel, I wouldn't say responsibility, that's probably too much, but is that one drive that you say, yeah, exactly, I want to depict that. I want to fill that gap so people can see what it can look like?
I would say that I could depict it as an experience in a way. And the fact that I've heard other experiences or seen other experiences, I know that it's possible and I don't have to like exclude it from being something that other people can experience. I like to say that we don't have a visual representation of a lot of the things that we hear about or see. And a lot of times people won't see something or won't believe something until they see it. So that's how I like to think about making images. And I also will say that even if somebody, you know, saw something, it doesn't have to be believable. I don't call my images autobiographies, even though I'm in the work. I feel like I'm taking myself out of the work. I mentioned not wearing my glasses when I photograph myself.
You're just like the body, the Black queer body in the work. It's not so personal. You use yourself as a stage person.
Yeah. Even though, I mean, like I photographed myself in college a lot when I wasn't photographing my white friends anymore. And I solely started to photograph Black people. I kind of skipped over this, but just how I started to utilize photographing. I went to college in Memphis, of course, Memphis College of Art, which doesn't exist anymore as a school. Memphis was where I went around in different neighborhoods and photographed strangers for maybe a year, which eventually became my thesis work, where I started to solely photograph Black male youth, Black men, boys, teens. I felt like I wanted to photograph people who I needed to relate to, who I felt like I was supposed to be relating to. Of course, I would ask if I could photograph them. They would ask why.
But what would you say if they asked why? What was your answer?
Well, more specifically, when it was my thesis work that I was working on, which is when I was wrapping fabric around Black men's heads to kind of associate them with this sort of royalty of African kings and queens. Mm. That's what I would say. Mm-hmm. But of course, if I'm photographing anyone, I would, you know, talk about the project that I was working on of, you know, like photographing strangers around Memphis. It started out as a class assignment, but then, you know, it eventually led me to going out and doing this on my own and not showing any of the images that I was photographing around Memphis in class. And my grades in my photo class actually started dropping because of the work that I was actually showing in class. So I introduced that work as the work of Black strangers in class, and it became a thesis work where I made this project called Beauty Kings, where I wrap fabric around men's heads. I wouldn't say that I wanted to associate them with beauty to them, because that wouldn't allow me to photograph or get any photographs, because of that was, I mean, it was kind of a test who would let me photograph them. Just walking up on them, I visited a lot of basketball courts, found people on the street, community centers. So this interaction would sometimes be seen by passerbys, you know. But I did get some no's, but the fact that I, you know, was able to continue the project was like the main thing. And it eventually became hard to do with strangers. So I started to photograph friends that I had made since I had been in Memphis. That became that thesis work. And then I was photographing myself for a little bit before that thesis work. And I was magnifying my body with these different Fresnel lenses, like what's used in lighthouses, and distorting my body. So I was making a lot of images where when the camera was focused on me, I was hiding my face a lot, wrapping my body in gauze, things like that. To talk about like this sort of construction of beauty image and this sort of beauty in the grotesque, I didn't really have the language for it then. I mean, of course, this was like college, you're churning out a project in class, a different project every week. And it's like, you know, it was a lot of output.
You needed that as a base to develop. So let's fast forward a little bit. I wonder how those images you create come about. So there is like a stage set.
Yeah.
Do you have the image in mind, or is there also some spontaneity on the set? And then also, do you use Photoshop for those images? The ones that you were creating in the past, like whatever, 3-4 years?
Well, the images that I make are inspired visually by so many different things, of course, as I mentioned. But so before I would, when I started making images, I tried to do the same thing that I did in Memphis, going out photographing strangers. I didn't feel connected to it. And then I turned the camera on myself. I mean, I knew I would do anything. I was available. So I was just winging it on the spot. I bought a bunch of clothes. I set up a lot of these different living room settings, or like bedroom settings, moved furniture around. I was thankful to like be able to use friends' apartments and whatnot. I wasn't using my own to like make images, because it was a lot of domestic images. So I was just winging it a lot then. Of course, the images might have been inspired by something thematically, like just core themes like sexuality or gender or race and class. So I was like specifically focusing on visual things, color, motifs, these different patterns and whatnot, looking at things that like different colors that I felt hadn't really been seen on a body like mine.
But is it now really staging? Do you have an image in your head? And you place the people and yourself sometimes like you want it to, in the setting you want to. So it's like a controlled thing.
So at this point, I write sentences about like what I want to be happening in an image, like actions. Before that, it was like I would draw sketches of how I wanted something to visually be. But it would all depend on the spot that I would, you know, have to photograph in. And of course, I could have been making anything, but that's what I did. That's where my head was at. That's what was like easy. And I didn't really explore like the landscape. Even when I had a car, I was focusing on very certain things, more studio like setups and whatnot. And then after that first year, my professors were like, you have this down. This is too perfect. We want to see you get dirty. We want to see you, you know, expand your lighting, emote more, photograph landscape, use natural lighting.
At what point are you now?
I do a mixture. And of course, I only photograph people that I know. So like now it's easier for me. Of course, and other people are involved. So it's like, we're only doing what we're comfortable with doing. A lot of people who are in my images either want to be in the work or like want images, and then we'll make some together. But now it's like, I have these lists of ideas that go back to my response to something or a historical reference. The specific image now is like, might be inspired by something written, but once I get into, it became a challenge with photographing in the landscape because it's a lot of the same thing. It's a lot of nothing. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if I'm just putting bodies into the landscape, figures into the landscape, like, what are they doing? How are they interacting? Are they interacting? It's not really always a specific narrative. It might not also be my narrative.
You let improvisation happen.
Absolutely. Like, I mean, it's not like highly choreographed or anything, but it's more so like I think about something else I like to do.
It's like a dialogue.
Yes. I like to say that I am creating a language with the body. Like many people do this. It's just like, I wanted like a visual language with Black figures that may look like they're dancing, but it's more gestural than anything. It is performative. That sort of performance isn't always what I set out to be. So like, for example, there's an image that I have with the photographer, artist Clifford Prince King, who's based in LA. I met Clifford when I moved to LA. I feel some of my favorite images there, and of people who are still in my life, like Clifford, Dedrick Brackens. But this image that I have with Clifford, they're both in many of my images. There's this image that I have with Clifford called A Day Apart, which is inspired by our birthdays being a day apart. I'm a year older than Clifford. I just had this like brotherly connection. This was like when I was identifying as a man. I mean, my pronouns are he, they, she. I do welcome all of that. I do identify as non-binary. So the image of Clifford and I is us in this dress. And the way that I wanted the image to be, and I got this dress at a thrift store while I was at the Skowhegan residency in Maine back in 2018. And I like wore this dress out. I mean, the dress was for like a drag ball that we had while at Skowhegan. I used the dress in images. It's the same dress of in this image that I have called Nah, where I'm swimming away and my ass cheeks are like coming above the surface of the water. And like the dress is kind of like showing that. And then Clifford and I are wearing this dress in the image of us. So it's got like some history.
I mean, the images are the images, but some of the images also you right. tell stories about them. Like, for example, yes. the image with the dress where you're swimming, where you talk about, was it like the Igbo people that they kind of like drowned themselves so they would not be taken into slavery?
Yes, that experience, that power over their own lives. Yeah. Yes.
So that they still had control.
Like, that's not my narrative.
Mm-hmm. You kind of like referenced it a bit like on the side, you yes. know, that like jumping into the water and yes. swimming in another kind of freedom in a way.
Right.
We were talking all about existing works or older works. Mm-hmm. What are you working on right now? And what will you be showing with Higher Pictures Generation at The Independent?
I will be showing images that were made between 2020 and 2023.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mixture of images with friends, lovers, and family, continuing on the body of work that I've been making. I really can't like separate my work into like different bodies of work.
Oh, it's a continuous flow?
Yeah. I mean, outside of exhibitions, like the work is separated in that way. It's like separated through the exhibition of the work. You know, my book just came out last summer and the images, you know, I wasn't making a project called Contact High. The work culminated into that.
You just continue to create your images.
Yes. It just feels like this sort of, I mean, I don't call it an archive, but I feel like it's just better to have images that aren't just for a specific thing mm-hmm. or time. I mean, of course, yes, we go back to the books we have. We go back to our photo books and whatnot and continue to look at them and like provide context for them amongst the many other things that continue to be produced today.
or that's my experience of doing that, or like buying photo books and whatnot. But it's also about this sort of necessity or like need. You know, I make images that I feel that I want to see, not necessarily that they need to be seen, mm-hmm. because I know that my work isn't for everyone. Not that it has to be. I'm either shown that or told that. Like I did this art exhibition that was public where I would have one of my images on 10 bus shelters around New York City. My image Undetectable, where two Black men are kissing and they're wearing masks and smoke is being blown through the mask. Someone put a note on that image on one of the bus shelters that said, "This is vile. Tolerance is a two-way street." Something disgusting, something like that.
Wow.
That's like very blunt.
Does that hurt you?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. It just, you know, I just know what kind of people are in the world. I like to make images also that kind of allow people to look at their own place in their own histories. I'm making certain images about these things for a reason. Mm-hmm. And we all are who we are and where we are for reasons. Mm-hmm. But I think about the images that I have in Independent will definitely be inspired by the theme of love. And I've grown, I've like watched, even though I like to take myself out of the work, like a lot of people that I've photographed over and over, like their lives have grown and changed. I photographed my grandmother in my work a few times. She passed in 2021, 2 weeks before my birthday. And I photographed her at a funeral. There were like, you know, all of these different moments that were new to me. Like I hadn't experienced a loss like that in a long time. So a lot of it is about the sort of growth of, I had some friends when I first met them, they weren't trans, and I've like photographed them through their transitions. Mm-hmm. It's really become this sort of expansive world of showing this sort of day-to-day tenderness, like talking about how we're all moving forward in our own ways and just sort of allowing ourselves to grow, but like also not forgetting that. I mean, I like to think about this body of work in this sort of cyclical way of, you know, like there's death involved in the work, there's life involved in the work, but not to be so literal. Mm-hmm. It is about this sort of actual life. I don't think it belongs to any one person, like it's not even mine. Mm-hmm. I just think it's like that representation of ins and out, up and down. Like I have a few self-portraits in it where I'm looking at this sort of freedom of the figures in the work, my own figure, to be more in control of how it's represented, even when I don't feel quite like me in some of the images that I have made previously. But in this presentation at Independent, we'll definitely have some images where I, even in the titles, there's one image called like the floating wet lotus of the Nile's fertile ground, burying you was never an option. And that title is a reference to this sort of act of not being drowned out, but it goes back to my own experience of, you know, feeling a certain way and not wanting to like drown that feeling away or like to express it. So it really is about this sort of continuing of how I'm learning to express and go through the life, you know.
Yeah, you're going through life, you're going through a human experience, and as right. It's your own, you express it in your own images.
But it's not to, I don't like to say that I'm telling the truth in my work. Again, it's staged, but they are inspired by all of these different experiences or like film references and music, and like those are the subtle things, and that's what I want to get to.
So if there's kind of like anything you think like you would like to say, which is one quote about your work, which is especially important to you?
I would say that the importance of Black people looking at themselves and being allowed to experience each other, discover the things that we often overlook, that really just keeps the sort of distance between how we continue to express love and care and tenderness and all of these things. Because it's not all that. Like when you mentioned you thought the work might be about pain or trauma, that's like, it's not excluded, but the goal is to kind of control like where that goes and how that's seen and like get to sort of the core of it. You know, it's not starting out as trauma. That's something that is a part of it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Daniela.
This was a special Voices on Art episode created in collaboration with Independent Art Fair New York. Listen to it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or the platform of your choice. On our website, van-horn.net, and in the Independent OVR at independenthq.com. Follow Independent Art Fair on Instagram at independent_HQ and the podcast at Voices on Art and at van_horn_Düsseldorf. Thank you for listening to Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast hosted by Daniela Steinfeld. Stay tuned and connect.